Midnight Matter Radio Show. My name is Jeffrey Grupp. It's June 2, 2009, a Tuesday night. This is the fourth edition of this show. In the first two shows, we discussed many things, but a couple of things were problems with the theory that humans have evolved from chimpanzees. And then last week, we discussed that if that theory is wrong, where did humans come from? And we came to the tentative conclusion that humans come from where what the world religions have called the sky creatures. That is a very difficult thesis for people to accept often because they have been conditioned to believe without any evidence that we come from chimpanzees or that the world religions are wrong. But the truth is, the average person has not looked into these matters at all, and they have just merely believed what they've been told on television or in a university class where the evidence is not presented to them. But if the evidence was presented to them, they would find that all the world religions, anything from the ancient Aztec or Mayan religions to Tibetan Buddhism, to the African religions, Caribbean religions, Christianity, and so forth, are all in complete agreement with each other. And they all have told a story where humans come from super beings, advanced beings that came from the sky. Whether these are gods that come from another dimension or extraterrestrials that come from space is up for debate. But what is clear is that human beings are not what we've been told we are. What we are is ultra-powerful, ultra-special entities with gigantic consciousness, gigantic brains, but we've all been conditioned to believe that we're nothing special. We're just creatures who are meant to just work in factories, watch TV, watch, you know, endless hours of ESPN and drink beer, which, you know, all those may be productive or fun as far as the drinking beer goes, if that's your taste, which is not mine. But that is not what humans are meant for. What humans are meant for is what, if you get a picture of, all of you should go watch the movie Dances with Wolves, which I have had confirmation of from several scholars of Navajo studies and Native American studies, that picture gives a somewhat accurate view of what the Indians look like. Also, so does the book, which I've read. If you want to know what humans are meant for, go watch that movie and watch the guy Ten Bears, the medicine man, in there. He's a person that's living on a higher plane. He's not living in the world of society as much as he's living in the world of the supernatural, which is all around him, beaming out of the flowers and the trees and the rocks. This is what humans are destined for. This is why we have huge brains. It's not to go develop bombs or things like that. We have huge brains because we are destined to have incredible religious experience, trance, ecstasy, nirvana, and we're also destined to be scientific and mathematical creatures, and we are destined to have incredible intimacy with one another. That's why humans have such huge brains, because our brains are a vehicle for our consciousness, and our consciousness is huge and great. The world religions tell us that in our consciousness lives the supernatural, the ultimate divine entity, or in some cases, there are the ultimate divine entity is broken up into parts. So the ultimate divine entities exist at the deepest points of our consciousness. This is what meditation is for. And as Walter Crutenden says in his incredible book, Lost Star, meditation is actually a technology. It's a technology for a higher age, an age not where people sit around and watch television and go and work at jobs that they hate and ignore their families and are frustrated and unsatisfied from the birth till death. Rather, for more advanced ages, such as some of the golden ages that we know little about, such as the societies that existed before the Egyptians, which our history books tell us don't exist, and the Egyptians just popped into existence out of thin air, it seems. I don't think so. I think that we have evidence that the Sphinx is not a couple thousand years old. The Sphinx is between 15 and 30,000 years old. Why? Well, it can be stated very simply, and it's John Anthony West, in collaboration with a professor from Boston University, whose name I've forgotten, at the slips of my mind at the moment. They have, starting with John Anthony West, they have put forth an astonishing theory, an unbelievably powerful theory, that states that the Sphinx in Egypt has to have water damage on the side of it. And they've gone through meticulous study. All kinds of atmospheric scientists and geologists have been collaborating with them on this study. They all, to my knowledge, with really no exception, agree that the Sphinx has tremendous rain water damage on the side of it. But the problem is, the last time there was that kind of sun, you know, tremendous rain in that part of the world was 10,000 BC. So you have to go thousands of years before that, because you have to have thousands of years of this rain pounding down on the Sphinx for it to be causing that kind of damage. So that means the Sphinx is at least, say, 15,000 years old. That means that that simple piece of evidence, okay, which all of you can get on a plane, go to Egypt, and look at the side of the Sphinx and see this with your own eyes. That's science, when you can see something with your own eyes. Okay? Science isn't a theory. You know, you go into the university and say, oh, you come from monkeys, and, you know, let's talk about how swell that is. Now, that's not science. That's called propaganda. That's called brainwashing. Science is starts with what you can see with your own eyes. Okay? So that should tell you that most of our universities have strayed from science, I'm sad to say. Pretty amazing. But anyways, back to the Sphinx. All of you can get on a plane and go see with your own eyes the side of the Sphinx. You can look straight at it, see this water damage, and you can go study all the geologists, all their descriptions of water damage and all the experiments they do to create water damage and entities and, you know, rock formations and so forth in the lab. And you can see crystal clear that this is water damage. Now, this is one of the most incredible discoveries. Well, actually, it's not a discovery. It's one of the most incredible deprogramming devices we can have. Why do I say deprogramming? Because all of us have been programmed through our schools and television, and really the churches are in on this too, to believe this false view of history, that humans will come from chimpanzees and we kind of wandered around aimlessly like a bunch of butt-sniffing apes for the last couple million years. Too bad there's no evidence for that, as we discussed in the first two shows of this radio program. And then there was this ice age, which, you know, really the ice didn't even cover that much of the world. But for some reason we're just told that, oh, because of this ice age, humans were not able to do anything and they just stayed primitive and couldn't build cities. You know, the ice only really covered the northern, or the top half of the world. You know, northern Europe, parts of Russia, Canada. I mean, so all of South America, all of Africa, most of Asia, southern Europe, you know, the lower 48 states of most of the lower 48 states of America, Mexico, all this is uncovered. And so what we're supposed to believe, the ice prevented humans from doing anything? So, I mean, so people couldn't walk around? So you just have to disregard this total, wild, reckless, uncanalized, propagandistic theory-making that the academics have given us, that, you know, the ice age prevented us from advancing, and then all of a sudden the ice melted. Well, so the theory goes, we've been told in schools, the ice melted 10,000 years ago, which that appears to be true, but they say, oh, because the ice melted, then we were able to all of a sudden build cities because we weren't inhibited by the ice. So it's just completely, I mean, there's no words for how astonishingly pathetic this theory making is. I really just don't know. I spend so much time just wondering, why are the academics going along with all this? I mean, they can't be stupid people. I mean, they have to have intelligence. So it's amazing the ability of denial that they have within them. But anyways, so what I was saying about the Sphinx completely destroys everything about that model of history that we've been taught in school. And the churches are going along with this too, and the TV talks about this too. Because the Sphinx shows that there were ultra-high civilizations creating things like sphinxes back 15,000 BC at least. Okay, and then also there's Tiwanaku over in Peru. Man, late at night, I think it's Peru. Slips my mind. That's a city, an ancient city in South America, way high up in the Andes Mountains, above the tree line, where you can hardly, you know, walk around and you can hardly breathe because the air is so thin. But you have all these remnants of these stone cities, or this stone city that was built. And you have all these incredibly heavy rocks, 80 tons, for example, 150 tons. They're all perfectly cut and put into place and such a degree that none of the rocks have shifted or cracked or anything. You can't even fit a credit card in the middle of those. You can't slide it in between those rocks. All in an area where, you know, people could hardly even breathe. You know, if you think they're trying to, if people were moving these rocks around on push carts or something, you have to wonder how they were doing it when it's such a thin atmosphere. So the point is that these are products of high civilization. And like the Sphinx, the Tiwanaku city goes back to the similar time of the Sphinx. And all of our history of the world is blown out the door. Now, some of you might say, oh, that is, those are nice theories that you're saying here, Jeff. But we've got, you know, there's too much agreement among all the textbooks and so forth. See, if you're thinking that, you're falling into the trap. What you're doing is you're denying what you can see with your eyes, okay? Because I just told you that the Sphinx is something you can get on a plane and you can go look at the side of it, okay? So you have irrefutable proof of something, water damage on the side of the Sphinx, okay? You can't deny what your eyes see. It looks like you can't say that the sky is green. You have to say the sky is blue because it's what your eyes report to you. Okay? So, if you say, oh no, the history books, there's too much agreement, well then you're just going along with non-evidential theory. Okay, you can't, when you go look what the history books say, you can't really pick things out in the history books and go and look at them out in the world. Okay? You know, if they say that, oh, the fall of Rome happened because of the bubonic plague, whatever, well, that's a theory. Okay? Can I go find direct sense evidence for that? No, I can't. So it's a wild philosophical theory with no evidence for it. And it should not be believed. It should be rejected. Or at least it should have incredible skepticism put onto it, which our schools don't teach us to do that. Our schools teach us you believe this theory that the history professor tells you in college, that it was bubonic plague was one of one of the main factors that led to the downfall of the Roman Empire. Or if you don't put that on your test, you get an F on your test, okay? And if you get an F, then you have a hard time doing well in the class. Okay, so there is no discussion, there is no debate in the academic world, unfortunately. It's very sad. All there is dogma in many respects in the academic world, and intimidation. Do as I say, believe as I believe, or you flunk and leave the school. And if you leave the school, then you don't fit into society as far as wanting to get the job that you want. So humans are easily tricked into not believing what their eyes tell them about material reality. If you want to know about material reality, as we discussed last week, you have to use your eyes. That's what your senses tell you about material reality. Okay? Whether or not material reality is real or not is a separate issue. Because if you want to know about material reality, whether or not it's an illusory reality, it doesn't matter with respect to your senses, because your senses will report to you material reality. Okay? So, but moving beyond that, the higher plane, the plane of spiritual consciousness, is what our human ancestors were concerned with in all their world religions through the last 10, 20, or 100,000 years. We don't know how far back it goes. All we know is that the story we've been told about human history and on the TV, in our schools, and now more and more in our churches is false. It doesn't tell us who we are. What we are advanced creatures who've been tricked into thinking that they're just sort of dumb animals. So it leads to the question of exactly where we come from. So anyway, let me talk a little bit more about this show before I go on. This show is called the Antimatter Radio Show because on this show we follow the religious paradigm where ultimate reality is composed of immaterial energy, non-material energy. And therefore, to say this is the Antimatter Radio Show means that we are against materialism. Materialism in the sense that we believe that what our eyes tell us is real is the only thing that there is. That only believing in material reality is correct, and that's the only thing that exists. No, there's a larger reality. What is called the natural person in philosophy is a person who has been tricked into believing that what they see with their senses is real, and what they experience with their senses is all there is. This is a philosophy of common sense to some degree. It's people are tricked into believing that if everybody says that cause and effect philosophy is real, then that is how reality is. In other words, we've all been told that cause and effect is the actual philosophy of the world, that events lead to other events. If I drop a stone and it makes a noise on this desk here in front of me, I will hear the sound. So the dropping leads to the hearing of the sound. Cause leads to effect. This is a false philosophy. It seems like it's real, and most people see it and believe that. You know, when they first hear about it, they're tricked into thinking that it just seems like, you know, that's what you've seen through your life with your eyes. And it seems like that's what reality is composed of. But that is simply a product of an ignorance about seeing all of reality. If you think this causal reality, this causal philosophy, the cause and effect philosophy is real, that is simply because you have not seen much of reality at all. That's because you're living your life in such a way that you are only focusing on a few material events here and there, and you're ignoring everything else going on, such as your own consciousness and so forth. And so therefore, if your eyes are just focused on a couple material events that seem to be leading from one another to one another in causal chains, causal event processes, you think that's all that's real. Okay. The fact is that if you look a little bit more closely at material events, they don't seem to make any sense. It doesn't seem to make any sense that most of the events we see lead to one another. So if you, for example, how many times have you been surprised about something happening where the expected outcome of a certain event doesn't happen? Okay, and then what people will usually be tricked into saying is, it's cause and effect. And there's patterns of cause and effect, such as every time I drop a rock, the rock falls downward. So since it falls downward every time, it seems to be the case that there are repeated patterns. Every time I do the dropping, the rock always goes down. So the dropping causes the downward motion. One leads to the other. But that's simply a pattern, and most of the time in reality, patterns don't exist that way. And most of the time, our consciousness has no idea what reality is doing, and the patterns are all chaotic and jumbled to some degree. The simple truth is the actual philosophy of reality is called telementation, where your consciousness is causing reality to exist rather than events in reality, material reality, causing other events in material reality to exist. Instead, what's happening is your consciousness is an immaterial entity, which is the force of and the power of all things that are real. And in the deepest heart of your consciousness is the ultimate divine entity or entities, as we've said. All the world religions teach this. Just if you doubt that, just open up Genesis 1, and it'll tell you that you, that is deepest consciousness, which is what you are, is in the image of God. Okay? So the philosophy of telementation is what you can call an anti-fatalistic philosophy. Fatalism is the idea that you can't control anything and things happen to you and there's nothing that you can do about anything. You may think that you're free, it may feel like you're free, but you are not free. It's just an illusion that you think that you're feeling free. In fact, there's nothing you can control. Events just happen and you can't do anything about it. If you feel yourself having the feeling of wanting to go get a glass of water, you may think that you're just a free person going to go get it, wanting a glass of water, but in fact, things have come into place to cause that to exist, and you actually didn't have any choice in that. You were sort of compelled or forced to, without any choice of your own, want the glass of water. So in fact, you're not free. Okay, so that is what the philosophy of cause and effect is all about. Cause and effect is the philosophy that makes us feel helpless, and we can't control things. The events in nature just go on as they do, and we can't do anything about it. The outside world, here's another thing that the cause and effect philosophy and the materialist philosophies lead to, and it's also a core issue in social science, the social sciences, and the universities of America, and it's absolutely the wrong philosophy, but it goes like this. The outside world of matter creates your inside world of consciousness. Okay, so there's this movement from the outside of you to the inside, where the outside creates the inside. All of you have probably heard the idea of the clean slate. I think that's a Calvinist philosophy, where humans are, notice I said philosophy, it's a total assumption. It's really a completely bogus theory. But let's just discuss it for a moment. It's the idea that you're born with a clean slate, and then through your life, the world corrupts you. So what that means is that the world is causing your consciousness to be, the inside of you, to be shaped in certain ways. Okay, that's very, very similar to what is taught in the academic world. It's kind of ironic because the academic world advertises itself as being so anti-Calvinist and so against all these religious concepts. But here we have the Calvinism is one of the core ideas of social science, because the social sciences are, of course, like economics, anthropology, sociology, psychology, and so forth. And they have a core idea in their the philosophy of these social sciences that the outside world, you can predict a person's behavior based on what the outside world is doing, okay? And they even go often further, and they will often say that a person is a product of what the outside world is all about. So that is very, very similar, if not identical, to the idea, the Calvinist idea, that what a person is caused by the outside world. Okay, now, yeah, sure, there are some instances where it does, the outside world has some influence on your inner consciousness. For example, I remember anthropologists, when I was getting my degree at the University of New Mexico, anthropologists would interestingly say if they knew how certain hunter-gatherer cultures were living, or certain hunting cultures were living, they could predict their marriage system and the frequency of rape and so forth. So, for example, if you had a culture that lived in a jungle and did very little farming, they could predict what kind of marriage system they had. If it was polyandry or polygamy or monogamy, they could predict how often rape would happen, what kind of religion they would have, and so forth. Okay, and if you had a culture that was not living in a rainforest but instead was in a grassy plain, sort of like the Plains Indians that we were discussing earlier in Dance with Wolves, you can also predict that what their religion will be like, what their marriage system will be like, the frequency of violence or rape and so forth. And it always is has similar aspects around the world in any culture in the same environmental circumstances. Now, that's all true and interesting. The And so there's therefore something to the idea that the outside world has some impact on certain aspects of human society. Okay? Now, but to say that the outside world constructs what a person is, and there's no inner mental mechanics that are behind what a person is a totally different philosophy. It's just the idea that environmental factors are a factor in certain cultural constructs. Okay? And furthermore, continuing on with that, the idea that humans are strictly a product of environmental circumstances is typically because modern science will not discuss nor really accept the idea that humans have an inner mental consciousness. Okay? What that means is they can't see with their... If you can't see consciousness in the way you can see a brick, I mean, if you look at another person and look at their head or something, you don't see thoughts and feelings and so forth. What you see is flesh and hair and the like. So in materialist science, all you can study then is the brick or is the flesh and the hair. You can never study the real aspects of the world, of reality, such as thoughts and feelings and so forth, because your senses are the bottom line, and therefore you're limited to what is sense information as to what your science can discuss. But science is not limited by senses. Science is limited by experience. Whatever your consciousness can report can become scientific as long as people have agreement on things. If all of us sat in a closet and prayed for 8 hours and we all had certain kinds of visions, we could all get together and we all could come to the conclusion that yes, we all had vision. This praying activity, this meditation, caused us to have visions. And here are the aspects of our visions. We all experienced them. We can all discuss them. So therefore, we're carrying out a scientific pursuit. That's all science is. The agreement of experience and the ability to have repeated experiences of some sort in order to carry out study. So, for example, if a scientist is studying an electron in the lab, he or she has an experience of the electron by seeing it on the computer screen, and they can have this experience over and over, and they can all have the same experience by looking at the computer screen, and they can therefore talk about it. Okay, it's the same idea. That's what science involves. So, unfortunately, we've been tricked into thinking that science is only about material reality, which doesn't even really exist, as we talked about in detail last week. It's just an illusion. It's a product of lower consciousness. It's a product of a life form, humans, who are not carrying out what their function in life is, what they're supposed to do. So, but anyways, I was going to talk a little bit about this radio show, and I got off on this tangent. I suppose I'll get off on a tangent in just a second again. But my name is Jeffrey Grupp. I'm a former college teacher. And if some of you have heard me on the Alex Jones Show, or, for example, the Nutramedical Report with Dr. Bill Deagle, this show, and you came to listen to this show because you heard me on one of those shows, this show may sound a little bit different. I may sound a little bit different than you heard me on those shows. And that's because this show is my show, and I discuss. This is the real me. On those shows, I often am asked to discuss certain topics, or the radio host brings up just certain things, and we only cover those certain things. But in this show, I'm a former philosophy teacher in college, at the college level, and philosophy, I always would tell my students, was the study of everything, and it was absolute non-specialization. Or pure generalist study, where you focus in on every topic and try to get the big picture. Many past philosophers held that to be true. And of course, that's the exact opposite of what the universities are about today, where you're supposed to just focus in on one thing and completely ignore any interconnections it has with anything. For example, if you're here at Purdue University, and I live in West Lafayette, Indiana, Purdue University is here in town, and if you study genetically modified soy, for example, you're supposed to devote all your time and publish as much as you can and learn as much as you can just about that one entity. And ignore everything, including, you know, any possible side effects that it has on humans. I remember I was talking to one of these scientists recently that studies genetically modified corn, and I said, so you're studying genetically modified corn, is that safe for humans? And he said, oh, yes, of course it's safe. I almost insulted that I would ask such a horrible question. I said, well, how do you know it's safe? He said, well, there's been studies. And I said, you know, have you read some of these studies? And he said, oh, yeah, he's read the studies. I didn't believe him, but he said, yes, of course he's read the studies. And I said, well, what are the long-term effects of this? What are the long-term studies saying? And, of course, he couldn't answer that question. And the very answer is because there are no long-term studies, because this stuff was just invented in the last 10 years, and it's just being put into the population in the last couple of years, and there's almost no study going on at all, and most of the study of genetically modified food comes from the very companies creating the genetically modified food. Oh, and of course they say it's all so safe and it's secure to all the world's problems. Of course, this person from Purdue University I was talking to couldn't say that genetically modified corn was safe in the end. So, but of course, he's going to continue his research because he wants a paycheck, and in order to work in the university, he must work on that sort of a project. He can't just give all that up and start to study, you know, organic corn or something. I mean, that's not what Big Agro wants, and Big Agro runs many aspects of this university here in town. So, anyways, it was a bit of a tangent. As I was saying, the Antimatter Radio Show. Many of you have heard me on the Alex Jones Show or Dr. Beagle's show, and I'm more interested in the big picture, studying everything. I'm trying on this show and in the books that I'm writing, and those that I've published already. I'm trying to give a picture of reality that is as full as possible. So I'm trying to make this show the real educational experience. It's very difficult for some people to hear this show. And when I was teaching in the colleges still, most of the students just did not want to hear what I had to say because it didn't matter how much evidence I could pile on to what I would say. It didn't matter how much evidence I could show the stuff they'd been taught so far didn't exist. They still wouldn't want to hear it because I think we're still in a state in America where people don't want the truth, don't want to hear it in general, and they just want, you know, their TV and six-pack and hot dogs, and please don't bother me after that. That's the product of a culture that does not know what happiness is. Happiness is religious freedom. Religious freedom actually lurks and exists deep within all of you. And just a little bit of meditation. The most powerful technology in the world is meditation. Just a little meditation kind of unleashed that. But we've been taught that happiness is sitting on the couch watching the ball game or some stupid sitcom or something that leaves us empty and unsatisfied and unintelligent and confused and wondering what in the world we're doing on this planet, who we are. And this is not what is going to create a world of peace. I was just thinking about how we're going to have all these torture debates on television these days, Nancy Pelosi and everything. And I think everybody's lost their minds. I remember hearing so often when I was a kid, people would tell me about the Nazis and say, can you believe that all happened? That'll never happen again. And everybody just lost their minds, and how could everybody go along with all that, and blah, blah, blah. Well, that's exactly what's happening right now. If you don't see that, then just don't even look into it, because if you don't see that, you don't have any idea what I'm talking about, and you're probably not going to understand it anytime soon. So that's very disturbing. Back to the idea that meditation is a spiritual technology. The reason meditation is a spiritual technology is because the actual philosophy of reality, the one that we can all verify, is not cause and effect, is not the idea that environment shapes everything about you. The actual philosophy is called telementation, and that is one where your inner consciousness creates the world. And the reason that none of us know that in America that this exists is because we don't do any meditation, any religious practice in general. All across the world, religious practice and meditation basically takes one form, and that is to expand your consciousness, amplify your inner feelings, and find all the special powers that exist deep within you. In one form or another, that's what the spiritual technologies consist of. So in Buddhism, for example, I'm a Buddhist, as I've said, so I'm going to use that as an example. In Zen Buddhism, a specific branch of Zen Buddhism called Soto Zen, they specifically show that meditation consists of merely taking your eyes that you use to look at the world and turn them back and look at yourself, look at your feelings, look at your thoughts, feel your feelings and thoughts. And for some reason, when you do this, something astounding happens. If you do it enough and you do it consistently and you do it relaxedly and you do it passively, but with some determination, incredible religious consciousness emerges from you. So the question is, why? If you just use your eyes to look outward throughout your life, that's the materialist perspective. And you will only see matter, and you will only believe that matter exists. And you will go on and be ignorant and full of sorrow, confusion, and violence. That's the world today. It's a non-religious world, a world that has forgotten all the world religions, doesn't know what the world religions are talking about, and doesn't know what I mean by antimatter. Okay, the other way of going about things is to look the opposite direction, look inwardly. For some reason, the exact opposite effect occurs when you look outwardly. What happens is you develop increased consciousness, whereas looking outwardly you have decreased consciousness, or what you could call semi-human consciousness. Looking inwardly, your consciousness expands, and you start to realize that there's more that exists than just matter, and there's an ultra-powerful world, reality, that has many layers, that is everywhere, and it's full of joy, power, religiosity, and light. And people, if you have not seen this, or in even the smallest degree you've tasted it, then you don't know at all what I'm talking about right now. And you're probably thinking what I'm talking about is ridiculous or childish, immature, fantastical, and silly. That's fine. You can go ahead and think that. If I was a blind person and you just tried to describe to me what color was, I wouldn't know what you're talking about either, and I'd think you were fantastical, silly, and ridiculous. Yeah, that's what we're dealing with here. Some people have tasted, to some degree, the big picture, the cosmic reality, the ultra-powerful light energy, divine light that is everywhere. And apparently St. Paul, for example, witnessed on his road to Damascus when he fell down in religious happiness. Okay, so those who have tasted this or want to taste it, or maybe some of you haven't tasted it, but you just have this feeling within you that there's something big that's knocking on your door. All you need is just the technology, the spiritual technology, which is called meditation. Take your pick. You can use Christian mysticism, Christian contemplation. You can use Buddhism or Hinduism or Sufism. You can use Muslim technology, whatever. Some are easier than others, but all of them in general will get you to, if you're disciplined and passionate and motivated, yet calm about it all, they will all get you to what you could call the promised land or nirvana. Or else, even if you don't get that far, you just get a taste of these, it's still a success because it will change you. It will make you more of what you are. It'll put you at peace. It'll make you filled with love for others. It'll get you to stop wasting your life on things that you really never cared about, like chasing money when you already have it, for those of you who do have it, or watching endless TV when it never satisfied you in the first place, or ignoring your children. You'll find getting in touch with yourself through spiritual technologies and becoming a religious person will get you to focus on what you really love. And of course, your own child is what you love more than anything, perhaps. So this is what humans are missing. And they don't even, in American culture, and I think all over the world, most people would have no idea what I'm talking about right now. That's how far removed we are. They think that what is real is this life of suffering, you know, working 10-hour days at jobs we hate, struggling for money and getting our house foreclosed on, having endless war and, you know, having to turn on the news and all they talk about is waterboarding, and they have the audacity to tell us it's not torture. And anybody who believes that is completely insane. Okay, if they have someone shove water into your mouth so you can't breathe over and over, there's a doctor that has to be present to make sure you don't die. Calls that not torture? That kind of person says the sky is green. You know what they need to do? They need to watch more TV because they're gone. Their mind is blown. Okay, get out of the way and leave the spiritual renaissance that's emerging in the world. Leave this spiritual revolution to us, the people who aren't there, who don't think the sky is green. Okay? Because there is a revolution brewing. Why? Because this entire world is collapsing. If you don't see that, that's just because you're watching TV. Okay? And they'll tell you everything's great. Buy stocks. Happy days are here again. Oh, General Motors just went bankrupt, but, oh, that's okay. You know, politicians have 23 reasons over here to tell you why everything's wonderful and you should dump all your money into the stock market or something ridiculous. We are going through what's called a historical shift right now. And it started. In many ways, which I don't have time to discuss, we can discuss in the future. Or I've discussed them on Dr. Deagle's show, the Nutri Medical Report, before. Look in the radio archives at the Antimatter Radio show, antimatterradio.com. Our world has been dominated by things such as, people think we have capitalism. We don't have capitalism. We have monopolistic economics. Okay, if we had capitalism, all of you would have money. You'd have big chunks of wealth. That's called capital. You'd have gold in your pockets, and you'd have things that are worth a lot of money, like, you know, a diamond ring or big stacks of ammunition and guns or whatever things people find are worth something and pay for. That's called capital. But most people don't have anything like that. They think they own a house, but really it's the bank owns it. You know, think you own your house, try not paying your payments and see how much you owe, how much you own it. What we've lived in for several thousand years is called monopolistic economics, where the world has been reduced to being dependent on one or two or three resources currently now. It's oil, corn, wheat, soy, rice. I can't think of any others. Might be two or three I'm missing. And everything else is either you're told doesn't exist or it's made illegal, like hemp, for example, is made illegal. You could run the whole world on that, but instead it's made illegal. And the whole world is reduced to a couple of resources that everybody depends on, and then a couple of people, the people I describe in my book, Corporatism, control these resources, and since they control the resources the people depend on, they can control the people in any way they want. Okay? That's what feudalism was in the Middle Ages. That's what all these so-called revolutions were in the Renaissance. That's what's going on right now. I call it corporatism in my book, Corporatism, the Secret Government of the New World Order, which will tell you everything you could ever want to know about this topic. I strongly recommend the book. Not because I'm trying to make money, because I don't make that much money off of it. What little I make, I do cherish, though. But because I want you to be filled with passion over this topic that I have, that I feel within me. Okay? We are shifting out of that phase now. How do I know this? You can go to the website, halfpasthuman.com. Okay? Those are about, that has to do with the web bots. WEBBOTS. These things predict the future based on psychic abilities within all humans, traced by all the dialogue humans have with each other on the internet and in written text. The psychic powers we all have innately in us come out. It, right there is the most amazing revelation in the history of the modern era. Because it shows that there's something lurking deep within us that's powerful, and we're all bogged down by this consciousness, this egotistical consciousness that is covering all that up. And in fact, what we are is something with tremendous power. Yet our universities are not exploring this. The TV doesn't even hint at it. Nobody knows it exists. Nobody knows what they really are. Nobody knows themselves. If you knew yourself, you'd be looking inside to see what you're made of. Nobody ever looks inside, so nobody ever knows what they are. People just look outside at the TV, at the material world, at suffering, and so forth. Okay, so what we are as humans is a species going into a higher time. Okay, whether you like the web arts or not, I don't really care. The truth is their predictions are right about half the time. Maybe sometimes more. It just depends on the topic that they're predicting. Sometimes they're 100% right. And they're predicting we're going into a world shift. You don't really need the web bots even to predict this. You can see it happening. Monopolistic economics is transforming into something else. Not everybody's exactly sure what. What I think is happening is, in a combination with spontaneous human events and the secret government that controls the world, engineering a breakdown, what I think is happening is the world as a whole is collapsing. The civilization of the world is collapsing. You know, I've had students get mad at me when I talked about this, and they said, oh, that's just what you think. Oh, if that's what I just think, then why? Then what's the news telling us about? Increase of poverty that is staggering worldwide, absolutely everywhere. Eastern Europe breaking down completely. Farming globally breaking down. Warfare rampant. United States government completely out of control, almost as if they are deliberately destroying the country. The national governments of the world falling apart. Nuclear weapons threat by North Korea. Well, actually, that's not as big as the other things I've just been discussing. World civilization is in huge trouble overall, as a whole. Okay. economic or ecological crisis, not caused by Joe Schmo, the average person, but caused by this monopolist, the leaders of the monopolistic economic empire of the world. Ecological crisis is staggering, out of control. I could go on. So if you doubt me that civilization is in trouble, why don't you count off those points I just made and check me on those. Okay? Because people, I've never had anybody do it. It's just simply facts. You can see with your eyes. Okay? So if that's what's going on, if civilization is breaking down, where are we going? Well, we're going to a place where civilization as we know it doesn't exist. We're going to break down to perhaps more of a local farming global culture. Not global in the sense that perhaps everybody will be interacting with everybody, so it's one big country. But what I meant to say was globally, we're going to become less technological. That's the obvious conclusion from everything I just said about civilization breaking down. Now, that may not be so bad. Okay, why? We don't need half this technology. Technology is wonderful, but the problem is that people who have control of it are using it for the wrong reasons. Example, modern medicine, called Big Pharma. How many things has it cured in the last 50 years? Answer, zero. Some of you are out there saying, oh, no, the vaccine for the smallpox or whatever, there's a cure. That happened over 50 years ago. Okay? And also, it's extremely, to see my book, Corporatism, Chapter 5, smallpox wasn't cured. Okay? It was eliminated by incidental quarantine that happened with ring vaccinations. Sherry Tenpenny is the best authority on this topic. But my book, Corporatism, Chapter 5, covers it in detail, quoting her several times. Anyways, global culture is thinking and transforming into something new. And I think that if civilization breaks down and we don't have our TVs and we don't have our jobs we hate, I'm sad to say that the transition will be gut-wrenching. Why? For the simple reason that nobody's prepared. Nobody knows what to do if, you know, grocery stores gradually go away, which will happen over the next couple of years. People don't know how to farm. They know how to watch TV, but they don't know how to farm. How absurd is that? You don't even know how to take care of your basic survival needs. Nobody knows how to get water out of a well, how to build a well. What plants have water stored in them that you can drink the water out of, what wild plants you can eat. There's food everywhere, free, the healthiest food growing all over your backyard. Half of them people call weeds and spray Roundup on them. Instead, we buy this poison at the grocery store, which makes us sick. But anyways, back to the idea of civilization technology. Modern medicine has given us cures for nothing. In fact, it's sort of dark age medicine. If you get cancer, what do? They cut part of you out. And that hardly ever cures it. Sometimes they'll put it in what's called remission, which just means that symptoms kind of go away a little bit for a year or three. But, the modern medicine actually doesn't have any solutions for anything. So the whole thing is a waste. It's a big money pit. You go to the doctor and they say, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do to help you. But good luck. And then they want to charge you millions of dollars to go back and tell them that over and over, for example, if you have cancer. So that's just a microcosm of the macrocosm of technology, which is maybe we do need to break it all down and start over with new good technologies, which are run by the people, not by monopolies, which actually help people. They're out there now, actually, just people don't know about them because they're not on TV. I'm sad to say that this show is ending. I feel I could go on for several hours. We need to continue to discuss all these issues, such as human origins. It has to do with the book I'm writing now. But I'd really like to thank everybody for listening tonight, and I really look forward to continuing this next week. And watch for me on other shows, such as the NutriMedical Report and the Alex Jones Show. Thank you.